And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Boys. It's May 31st, 2020. This is the voice of the resistance and the Republic of Kanata. Follow our work, murderbydecree.com. Today, two very important update interviews I did recently with our affiliates, Sarah Westall, a journalist in Minneapolis, and Mike Holt, a battling common law warrior in Brisbane, Australia. These are two very important interviews because they update listeners with what's been going on, not only in terms of the obvious issues around you, but the campaign to reclaim liberty at the base in our grassroots communities for all of the people. Also, a flagging announcement for people living in Alberta in Canada. There will be important Common Law Republic gatherings over the next period between the dates June 5th and 12th. Write to republicofkanata@gmail.com for more information. These meetings will be in Calgary, in Lethbridge, in Edmonton, and various other rural communities as well. So here are the interviews. Enjoy. We'll be back next week. Stay strong. Stay clear.
You know, when it's just, people are just, when I tell them these things, they can't believe it because, you know, for a whole country to go along like this, it's just mind-boggling. But in Canada, the added difficulty is they have a statute in place saying nobody can receive a license to broadcast, to publish a newspaper, whatever, if they've ever faced a lawsuit. Well, I mean, if you're a media of any integrity, somebody's going to threaten you with a lawsuit, but if you've even been threatened, it doesn't even have to have gone to court, but if they even threaten you, you can't get a license from what's called the CRTC, the Canadian Radio and Television Corporation. You know, so it's a routine practice. Even when they catch the Mounties doing this, they never reprimand them because it's a government policy. There's nothing really illegal about genocide in this system. Be self-governing, and then you're not complicit in these crimes, which, of course, is morally and legally detestable to do, to be part of this whole thing.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Kevin Annette rejoining the program, and we're going to talk about what's going on in Canada. I think a lot of people in the United States or in other Western countries are so focused on their local situation, you're not aware of some of the things that are going on in other Western countries. And I think for people who are in the United States, which is probably the majority of my listeners, although I am growing quite a bit internationally, it's pretty scary to hear what's really going on in Canada. And he's going to share that. And they're to the point where if anybody questions, this is what Trudeau said, anybody questions what the government is doing, they're going to be prosecuted. So that was actually said to the people. And, you know, all the gun grabs and the complete lack of freedom of speech and what's really going on there is scary. The Chinese bringing troops in there and the British government working with China, taking over land in Canada. And what does that mean to the United States? This is all very scary developments that we need to be really, really clear on. And, you know, when Trump says that China is something that we need to be paying attention to and we need to protect ourselves, these kinds of situations should be clearer in our minds that there's more going on here and we should be aware of it. And then we go on and we talk about the big pharma and the Vatican. And the Vatican has a much bigger role than people realize on what's going on with big pharma. And then we also talk about the Native Americans because the Native Americans are used as test communities for so much, whether it's their children or, you know, I had a video that I did, and I'm going to link it below, of how they were testing chips, microchipping people, communities, Indian communities, and adding their bank accounts and health records and everything in those. And they always test out those communities first before they roll it out. And it's just all been laid out for us. And this is a very good and eye-opening interview so that Americans and other Western countries can see what can happen to another Western. This is our neighbor. and this is going on. And we have to be on high alert and figure out how to deal with these things. And I want to also, before we get into this interview, I want to remind you that my shop is up. I have coupons, not just for my patrons, which get more, they get better savings, but even my regular listeners, I have 10% off the organic C60 face cream and body lotion. It's a defying age lotion. I mean, the C60 really reduces your wrinkles, and it's not just like a lot of the other stuff will, like the retinol, it'll take the first layer of cells off. This is about making your skin better because it heals it. It makes it younger from the inside out. If you're taking C60 and you're also putting it on your face, I also have the Defy Time, which has a 15% coupon. It's much more expensive, but that has the telomere lengtheners. So you kind of use, I use a combination. I use C60 in the morning on my face and the Defy Time at night because I want my telomeres lengthened directly, and then I want the benefits of C60 on my face. So listeners can get discounts on that and the C60 gel caps and so much more. So let's get into this important interview with Kevin Annett. Hi, Kevin. Welcome back to the program.
It's good to be here, Sarah. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's too bad we couldn't get the video working. And of course, you're not, they don't usually do you any favors. But I'm really glad that you're here, at least on audio only, because we have a lot to talk about. And I really wanted to talk about some of the things that are going on in Canada. I don't think people quite realize the extent of, you know, everybody's so focused on their local situations right now, and they don't realize quite the extent of what's going on in other countries. And this Canada being so close to us, I think it's really important that we, at least people in the United States and other Western countries, are aware of what is actually going on. Can you talk about how Canada is still in a lockdown and what that means?
Definitely. The thing in Canada that is quite appalling, and it's really surprising, I think, perhaps to an American audience, where you have, you know, the state governments have a fair amount of power in terms of what they can do and not do. In Canada, it's so totally top-down. I'll give you an example. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is basically acting as a one-man government. Parliament has not been in session for over 2 months. The courts of law are all shut down. You can't, they're closed like all the other buildings. And he's operating not even under the Emergency Powers Act. He hasn't even invoked the Emergency Powers Act, which gives the government a certain, you know, leeway to do these things if there was some kind of natural emergency. He hasn't even invoked that. And the Governor General, who's the formal head of state, has not even been heard from. So this man is operating completely alone without authority. So that's why we're saying to people, there's no reason to obey any of these rulings coming out of, you know, the government, like quarantining, distancing. All of this stuff is just his decision to do, and he has no authority or lawful standing in any of this. And so it's caused a lot of doubts. I remember talking to police about this, and they're really confused because they keep getting told a different thing every day. Obviously, you know, there's more going on here than we realize. And in that connection, on June 4th, it'll be the first anniversary of Trudeau admitting publicly that genocide happened in Canada. At that point, under international law, Canada should have faced what they call prosecution and punishment for genocide. And he also was under personal indictment for taking bribes from a company called SNC-Lavalin in Quebec. And he obstructed a police investigation into his own guilt in that scandal. So all of this came along, you know, conveniently for him to get off the hook. He should be in front of a war crimes tribunal right now and a court of law for what he did, but now he's superseded that. So I think that has something to do with why he's acting like a one-man, like a king, basically.
Well, that's what I think. He's just like a king and a complete dictator and telling people what to do. Now, is he taking direction from the crown? Which my understanding is that's what he does. When he swore into office, he said that he was at the service of the crown.
What that means is that he's acting under the authority of what's called the Queen's Privy Council. And the Privy Council is a small little, it's a typical colonial body of insiders who pass most of the laws anyway. People don't realize that about three quarters of all laws passed are never even debated in Parliament. They're passed order in council. You know, all the genocidal acts, the Indian Act, the residential school legislation, all that came out of order in council. And once again, this so-called health emergency is coming through order and council. So it's four or five guys in a room deciding, you know, what needs to happen, and then everybody just goes along because they think that's somehow democracy and work. So, it's definitely at the behest of the Crown, which is, as you know from our work, already a convicted criminal body.
Well, now, those five people or whoever's in that room making those decisions, does the public know who those people are?
They know some of them. A few of them are insiders like senior civil servants. One of them, to give you an example, is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, Beverly McLaughlin. So, again, it's a colonial system. There's no separation of powers, you know, checks and balances, the judiciary monitoring the government, that kind of thing. No, they're all in the little clique together. And it's just we never had any kind of responsible government in Canada. Our 1776 got crushed. There was an attempted revolution in 1837, and it got crushed, and the power of the Crown and the Church was kind of solidified at that point. So that's historically where this stuff's going on. But it becomes especially blatant at a time like this, you know, when it's just people are just, when I tell them these things, they can't believe it because, you know, for a whole country to go along like this, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, everybody's acting like children, and they've been trained to act like children because a lot of us are just absolutely appalled or just mortified by the fact that people are following so easily without, when we know what the truth is. But are more people questioning? I mean, is the censorship worse there than here?
Well, it's hard to judge because don't forget the media, of course, is completely a corporate machine. And, we only really get the truth out through programs like yours, alternative media, just people sharing stuff, right? But in Canada, the added difficulty is they have a statute in place saying nobody can receive a license to broadcast, to publish a newspaper, whatever, if they've ever faced a lawsuit. Well, I mean, if you're a media of any integrity, somebody's going to threaten you with a lawsuit. But if you've even been threatened, it doesn't even have to have gone to court, but if they even threaten you, you can't get a license from what's called the CRTC, the Canadian Radio and Television Corporation. So it's totally managed that way. And so reporters know to keep in line. People know not to cover certain issues and people. And I'm a living example of that. Since 2008, my name has never been mentioned in the media because our work contrasts with the official line about the residential school genocide, right? Once the spin was brought in.
Well, that's just, I've ever been sued. I mean, all they have to do is shut you up and sue you, and then you're done. That's just...
Even threatened.
Yeah.
You can't ever be even threatened with a lawsuit.
So basically you have no freedom of speech there. It's a totally controlled system just because of that.
Trudeau actually went out soon after the so-called coronavirus came in. Trudeau made a statement that anyone who criticizes the government's measures will face prosecution and jail. Well,
wow.
This guy must not know his own history because going back to Magna Carta over 1,000 years ago, it's been a standing law and tradition that no man shall be tried for his thoughts. In other words, even if you advocate treason, even if you're just advocating it and not doing anything about it, it's not a crime. You can't be criminalized because you have a certain attitude, right? And that's exactly what he's saying. You've got to think this way, do what we say, you know, trust us, even though Health Canada, that's imposing these health measures, admitted that they were using children for generations in their medical experiments in the Indian hospitals. And you're going to trust your children's fate in the hands of these genocidal agencies? You know, I don't think so.
And they lied and everything else. Now they came out and said that the numbers are, our CDC said that the numbers are extremely low and it's really not any different than the flu. So are people, you know, with that in mind, everything should go away. Everything should go away. But with everything that's going on, are people seriously questioning it? I mean, just the comment that he says, if anybody questions the government, you are going to be prosecuted. I mean, that is about the scariest thing I've heard coming from supposedly a free country.
Well, it isn't. And, you know, Canada's on the ground is an extremely controlled, repressive society. And a lot of people are objecting to that, actually. And a sign of that is the fact that I've been going around, especially Western Canada, and organizing meetings of people who want to form common law assemblies and bring in their own community policing, common law sheriffs, that kind of thing. It's a new idea for Canadians. It's more kind of obvious to Americans, that idea. But we found that the response has been incredible. Like just lots of people showing up saying, you know, we got to do something about this. There have been protests routinely in all the major Canadian cities. Hundreds. There was recently a couple of thousand people in Montreal protesting the lockdown. So there is a lot of resistance but in people's minds, and yet even the people resisting are not realizing that, in a way, this is nothing new. And an example I give to people is, under the Indian Act, for over 100 years, if you're living on a reservation, you can't refuse medical treatment. If they want to come in and shove a needle in your child's arm, you go to jail if you refuse it. You couldn't leave the reservation without a special pass, like what they're trying to do now with quarantining everybody, where you're locked in your home. All of that has been happening to Aboriginal people for over a century. And I say, well, now they're just doing it to all of us. We're all on the reservation now, if you like. You know, like in this sense, the laws are not new. They're just happening more generally to all of us. So I say to people, well, if you ignore genocide against one group, it's going to blow back on you. And here's a perfect example of what's going on now.
Well, they used to, in this country, they were testing chipping in the Native American populations. They had multiple communities where they were chipping them. Their health records and everything were in their chip, their bank accounts and everything. They were doing this 20 years ago. And in that episode, she was saying that this is very common. They test things that they're going to roll out to the public in our communities. I have that video. I should probably link to it below so people can hear it. She ended up not coming back on my show because she was threatened. And they just decided not to. She wanted to do more shows with me and couldn't because of that and her family and things. But that's just very important that these tests and these communities, it's a common pattern.
Well, yeah, and I'll give you an example of that. In the downtown east side of Vancouver, where I really, over 30 years ago, I began doing this work with Native people, there's a thing called Oppenheimer Park. It's a big public space. And a month ago, they started herding all the homeless into this park. No distancing. They've got everyone stacked in like sardines behind fences. There were police barricades, and you couldn't leave it. And most of these homeless people are Native. Well, lo and behold, about a week ago, the whole place is cleaned out. If you go there now, there's nobody. They've got these high, 10-foot-high fences around it. You know, they're probably going to sell off the park to some developer, you know, Chinese developer.
Where are the people?
That, here's the point. They claimed, I went to talk to the cops, and they said, oh, we've got them all housed in local hotels. And I said, which hotels? And they mentioned one, and I go there, a Holiday Inn, and they say, no, nobody's come here. So they're openly lying. It's like routinely this is done to the homeless. They're just carted away, and who knows where they are. But again, like I said, this is not new in Canada.
So you just don't know where the homeless went. So are you guys thinking that they eliminated them somehow?
Well, routinely that happens. I mean, to give an example, it even made the corporate media a few years ago where a survivor was called Midnight Tours. The police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, will grab Indians in the middle of winter, take them outside of town for 30 miles and just dump them there without their shoes. Oh. They're dead in the morning, right? And, you know, so it's a routine practice. Even when they catch the Mounties doing this, they never reprimand them because it's a government policy. There's nothing really illegal about genocide in this system. And so we know how it happens, but this is happening now on a bigger scale. It's like with the story on the missing Native women. You know, the government had another pseudo-inquiry into it. But what they don't bring out is the fact that whole families go missing in northern British Columbia. And that's a whole other story having to do with the Chinese and them sponsoring basically death squads to force Natives off their land to grab it because the Chinese own more and more of Canada, its natural resources, and its superport in Prince Rupert on the West Coast. So it's all of that tied into it as well because Trudeau has allowed China to station their troops on Canadian soil to protect their investments. He's removed all limits on Chinese investment in Canada. So he's working directly with China on a lot of this stuff.
Well, and that must be at the direction of England. And do you think that there's a threat to the United States because of that?
Absolutely there is. And as a matter of fact, I think it's part of the bigger, well, I know it's part of this bigger geopolitical fight between China, Russia, and America for you know, who's going to be the top banana now? And America's going down, and China's the rising power, and Russia's trying to kind of broker the two. But and of course, the Vatican is too. That's their role all along. They're trying to play all sides in this game. But it's definitely a reflection of that, that whole struggle as well.
Well, this whole shutdown has been is to destroy the United States. I'm almost to destroy the natural order of things right now. I shouldn't say natural. It's never natural. But whatever the order is right now, that's what this whole lockdown is to destroy so they can build something new up.
Very much. I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Big Pharma and the Vatican. You've stated that before we got on, we talked about there's some pretty big moves going on with the Vatican, but it's just not being talked about. Can you share some of the things that you know?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. Just a couple of days ago, the former head of the Jesuits, Adolfo Pichon, died suddenly in Tokyo. And if folks recall, he was one of the three defendants in our second common law court trial. We named Bergoglio, Pope Francis, the present guy, Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and Adolfo Pichon, the head of the Jesuits, the so-called Black Pope. All three of them were named as being involved in this ninth circle, child sacrificial cult. All of them were seen at rituals. We had people's affidavits, you know, all of that.
Yep.
And after the verdict of that second common law court trial came out, he resigned. Pichon, the head of the Jesuits, said he was resigning. That's only the second time in the history of the Jesuits that any top, they're called superior generals, that they had ever resigned. And one of the reasons they did is because the Jesuits are heavily involved through things like Citibank of America and Chase Manhattan. They're very heavily involved in the drug trade and in Big Pharma. And one of the things that it's interesting he died right now, because one of the things that they were sponsoring for many years was Jesuit-run hospitals, Catholic hospitals, where children were routinely used in drug testing experiments, and including, I believe, in the present, you know, coronavirus thing. There's a whole Vatican link to Big Pharma there that they want to keep hidden. So that's one of the reasons they've kept a low profile. They do like they did in any kind of like the residential schools or the genocidal disclosures. They step back and they let the state cover for them. And that's in a way what's going on very much right now.
Because they're way more actively involved. And if that came out, but you know, so much has come out on the Vatican that I wouldn't be surprised. Nothing surprises me anymore, because they use the organizations that seem the least likely to do it is where they shove it, so that people don't question it.
That's right. And don't forget, even if people were widely disenchanted with the Catholic Church, which I think they are, you know, I think there's a lot more awareness now of what it actually is, you know, in terms of a huge money laundering criminal racket, basically. But even when people are aware of that, don't forget they're still heavily protected by the state and by law. If you in Canada, again, another extreme example, because churches and government can do anything they want in Canada, basically. There's no recourse under the law to fight them. But if there's a thing traditionally called the benefit of clergy, where going back centuries to England, where if you were convicted of a crime, all you had to say was benefit of clergy. You claimed to protect the church, and you were let off. And that's because the church traditionally was a law unto themselves. And still to this day, Catholic policy says that the church is not under the law of the land. So if a priest rapes a child, everyone is to be quiet about it or you're excommunicated. And how can you tell people to defy the child protection laws of their own country unless they're a law under themselves? So they're relying on that heavily. You know, there have been examples in the States where Native people have told me of where children are buried near former Indian schools. And they've told me that, well, we went to the FBI and they said they couldn't dig there because it's church property.
Oh, geez.
So, okay, well, then serial killers get to tell the police what to do, right?
That's exactly right. So what do people think about the gun grab that's going on there? Because with all that as a backdrop, you have to be insane to not want freedom to bear arms.
There is no such under the law in Canada. The state, you know, owns the guns, and Trudeau brought out all these new restrictions on firearms. In Canada, you can't go in and just buy a gun. if I wanted to get a hunting rifle, I have to register, and I have to be part of an accredited gun club, whose members are all monitored. You can't just go get a rifle. You can't get certain weapons at all, like semi-automatic weapons, or handguns. They do thorough criminal checks on you and the whole bit. So it's very controlled already, but it's become even more controlled. And there's, you know, opposition, like in some of the rural areas in Alberta, where there tends to be much more of an independence attitude to things, you know, among Western farmers, and that they don't like the central government at all. There's a lot of people who just carry arms anyway. But they can be arrested and thrown in prison at any point by the RCMP for doing that.
Yeah, well, they all get to have arms, right?
Well, it's the same feudal attitude. I mean, it's we've never had this idea that people are self-governing. And so it's harder for Canadians to get their heads around the fact that, yeah, you can say no. You don't give your consent, right?
So now the self-governing is so much more important right now. Where are you at with that? And I mean, because I think everybody kind of gets to the point where I just don't want to be part of this system. And how do I become self-governing? And I've done a lot of shows on this, but I have so many people that fight with each other behind the scenes, and they all say they're right and the other people are wrong. And I just say, so you guys are all idiots if you're going to fight with each other. This is a bigger cause. So that's why I like talking to someone like you, who is just above that. And you have to be above that. This is a pretty serious situation. So where are you at with this?
Well, you're right that people, it's easier to fight each other than a very dangerous adversary. And so you tend to find that. But, you know, what we do to get around that is we've been holding these common law assemblies. And in Canada, it's been under the jurisdiction of the Republic, which in 5 years ago, in January 2015, there was a convention in Winnipeg, and a couple of hundred people established this Republic of Canada, which is, it's simply a common law jurisdiction that says we're not under the authority of the Crown and its laws, because it's an illegal, criminally convicted body, and we're under natural law jurisdiction, and we can covenant then to form our own government. And you start that locally, we get people to sign a charter. 12 men and women just sign this common law charter saying we are self-governing. We have the right to form our own courts, our own grand juries, our sheriffs, and it's a way we're taking back power into our community. And we've had, to give you an example, there's already in the last about 6 weeks, I've helped form 11 different assemblies like that, and the people are just thronging to them. Because it's been an idea that's been lying latent for a long time in people in Canada, because, you know, the situation is just here so bad that it boomerangs in the other direction, and people are wanting this kind of republic alternative. And so what we say to people then is it's not what's important is that not we come up with a perfect solution, because no one has a blueprint for that. It's a general idea that people need to govern themselves. How that's going to play out in every different community, people have to decide themselves. So we say get together, start something, and see what happens. That's kind of like one of Napoleon's favorite quotes was he would say, you start a battle and then see what happens, because everything is unpredictable in life. You don't know what's going to happen. You've got to maneuver all the time. And so an example of that is we had in North Winnipeg an assembly formed last year, actually, and they've been telling the local police that they're going to bring in their own ordinances for the community. For example, the streets are all run down, so they're going to start blocking off the streets, planting community gardens, taking back that power. The police are already looking at the other way, because they realize, and we've been holding, one of the things we do is we hold common law workshops where we bring people in and train them in the basic principles. And we've invited the police to come into these things. And they look favorably on this because their main concern is, well, let's find a way to all work together, because your average cop is just wanting to do that. He's not operating according to a political agenda. He just wants to work with people to...
He just wants peace.
You know, especially if you're...
True peace officer. I mean, they used to be peace officers, and that's what they were there for, is to just create peace. Now they've turned into a thug for the whatever they... And they don't like that. The majority, some like it. But I'm hearing more people. Catherine, right. Not Catherine, Cynthia McKinney came out and talked about how she's trying to do this more. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to do it because they just are horrified by what they're seeing in their local communities and their national, I mean, everywhere. We're horrified. And so we just want to have what we were always promised growing up. You know what I mean? We want our freedom. We want what you
That's
promised
right, yeah.
us. And if you aren't going to give us that, we're going to have to create it ourselves. You lied to us our whole lives, I guess.
Well, and don't forget.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you know, that's a long tradition in Canada as well. I mean, there was, people don't realize that for a long time, especially in Eastern Canada, the people who were behind the movement for a republic in Canada then and now, a lot of them were immigrants from America. And like my great-great-great-grandfather Philip was part of the rebellion, and he had married into an American family. There was a lot of ties across the border, and that's what the colonial authorities have always worried about, you know, this American influence on their loyal little, you know, crown population. Canada's vast, and one of the things that we realize is that people have got to be organized locally because it's unmanageable otherwise, and that's why we're kind of trying to devolve power back into the local assemblies.
Well, where is Trudeau? Is he going to get, I mean, is he actually voted in? Or is that whole process? I mean, I'm appalled or maybe shocked that he's acting like a king and there aren't even more riots than there are, you know, more, not riots, but...
He's kind of a personification of the way Canada is, which is an old boys club with no accountability. Even the notion that you have to be accountable is out the window. You know, like I mentioned, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is a member of the Privy Council. So there's no check and balance on anything. So Trudeau doesn't have to be elected at all. There have been cases in history where Canadian prime ministers have never been elected. They're the head of their party, and as soon as the party gets elected, they become the prime minister. So, no, it's not democratic at all in that sense. There's a lot of rumors going around that he's under house arrest, that you know, there's a move against him and that. But a lot of that we found in the residential school campaign is smoke and mirrors put out by the government to distract from what's really going on. The reality is that their attempted quarantine, everything is breaking down. There's people all over the place ignoring the distancing. Out on the beach in Vancouver the other day, I noticed there's hundreds of people. They're all just sitting together on the sand, even though the Vancouver City Council had said, you can't sit on the sand, you can only walk across it.
It's so stupid.
But everyone's ignored that. Yeah, it's insane.
Well, it's stupid because it doesn't, the numbers don't support what they're talking about. The only people that should be protected are the ones in the nursing homes and the elderly, and they're not even doing that. Where I live, we have the worst numbers in the country, and they're still sending the sick back to the nursing homes, and they're just dying in droves. I guess it's their way of getting rid of the homeless, except this time it's the elderly. It's just that same lack of care while you're really cracking down on everybody else. It's so hypocritical that I don't have any faith in anything they say anymore after I watch them do that. How can you trust anyone after they do that?
You can't. And what you're saying, Sarah, is reflected in the thinking of millions of other people all over North America. And this is very dangerous for the elites to have done this move because it's blowing back in their face in a big way. It's going to boomerang against them because more and more people are saying, look, some big pharma wants to make mega profits, right? Why should that restrict our freedom of speech and movement? This is totally unconstitutional and unlawful what's going on. And we don't have to obey authority. And even the U.S. Supreme Court says that time and again, that statute without consent is not binding authority, right?
Well, and they also played their hands by, you know, like Bill Gates put out a patent 5 weeks before H.R. 6666, which is the tracing law. 5 weeks before they did that, he put out a patent, New World Order 2020-666. And then before that, he put out the video commercial with the Satanist artist, the Abramovich. I mean, how much more blatant can you be? And it horrifies people. Yeah, I know.
Right. Well, that's what we're saying when we form these assemblies. You can get out of the system now. Withhold your taxes. Keep it in the community. be self-governing, and then you're not complicit in these crimes, which, of course, is morally and legally detestable to do the, to be part of this whole thing.
Keep it in your community. That's what I like, because otherwise you're giving it to where? What are we giving it to? The unlimited funds that the PREP Act? In the United States, there was the PREP Act went through that basically it said, if there's a pandemic, unlimited funds to go towards finding a vaccine, and there's absolutely they are, don't have any kind of liability, but there's it repeated it. They have no liability if the vaccine doesn't work, but they get unlimited funds. That's the PREP Act that went through.
Yeah. Okay, so that's an example. In any crisis, it's a big money grab.
Yes.
And like Trudeau has just set up a new, quote, crown corporation in Canada to do exactly the same thing. But it's a way to siphon off the money. You know, there was a study done 3 years ago. If you take all of the wealth produced every year in Canada and divide it equally among the people, all 33 million of us, we'd each have an income of $250,000 every year. I mean, that's the amount of wealth and resources being pumped out of this country. And the IRS in Canada, it's called the Canada Revenue Agency. They're an offshore corporation. They're not accountable to the government. They're siphoning the money to who knows what offshore accounts. We know that most of them are channeled through the Vatican Bank and a bank in Geneva called the Bank for International Settlement. We know that those are kind of, they're called extraterritorial. Nobody has jurisdiction over them, so you don't know what the money is being used for. I mean, it's that same game going on under the guise of a health emergency, right?
Yeah, it just, if it's not obvious now to people, I don't know what more they can do to make it more obvious. Well, how can people learn more about you and follow your work? Because you do amazing work. And you make it, what you do is you make it more understandable for people. It's not as confusing. You talk very well and help educate people, which I absolutely love.
Well, thanks, Sarah. It's always good to have, to use this platform and to talk to you, because it makes a big difference in terms of people thinking, well, at least there's one source out there that's telling what's going on. So I thank you again for what you're offering. Murderbydecree.com is the main website. That's where all my books are listed. You can get our books on Amazon. Just put in Kevin Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T. I draw attention to our Establishing Liberty, The Case for Canada. That's up there. It's a book describing the Republic and our vision. The Common Law Training Manual, The Whistleblower Manual, all of those. I've just written a couple of new books, and they're up there as well. But also write to us, The Common Land, @gmail.com. I'm on tour, including into America. Apparently, the borders might be opening up again after June 20th. That's the rumor. But either way, I'm available at any time to work with people. That's most of what I do, just on the ground. So thecommonland@gmail.com and murderbydecree.com. Also, our Sunday radio show. We do a blog radio at 6 p.m. Eastern time every Sunday at bbsradio.com/herewestand.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much, Kevin, for everything that you do, for being my friend over the years and for sharing all this information and for working so hard at this. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll get there. Yeah. You shall overcome.
Welcome to the Bloody Aussie Battler podcast with your host and fellow battler, Mike Holt. The Bloody Aussie Battler brings you news, views and interviews as we discuss what the liars, thieves, criminals and traitors have been doing to our country and to Western democracies around the world. My guests discuss important issues and explain why and how it's time to drain the billabong to bring back decent, lawful, moral government that will serve we, the people of the Commonwealth of Australia. Join us now on the Bloody Aussie Battler. Australia! Australia!
Are you interested in podcasts that uncover the truth? Tune into Widdershins Podcast. straight from science fiction, we uncover the technologies being developed right under our noses. We bring to you the world's leading scientists, engineers, and experts to discover just how far away these things really are from becoming our reality. www.widdershinspodcast.com.
Dick Yardley's book, Australian Political and Religious Leaders, Treason, Treachery and Sabotage. Dick exposes how Whitlam, Hawke, Keating, Goss, Rudd and all the other Fabians have destroyed our manufacturing and agriculture. If you want to know exactly how they have done it, get Dick's book at advanceaustralia.com.au and click on merchandise. Knowledge is power. Get the power to fight the corruption today. G'day again, and today I've got Kevin Annette with me from Canada. We've spoken to Kevin before, but Kevin, you issued some very big news this week, so why don't we start off by you telling us what that's about. But before we do, welcome to the show.
Thanks, it's always good to be here. We in Canada, for a number of years, as you know, we've been establishing a different jurisdiction under common law that people can be part of, because it wasn't just in anticipation of what's coming now, but it gives people an alternative to the system and encouraging them to be self-governing and take action. Well, now with the boot coming down, it's very important that people go from words to action. So the first thing is to defend people. And we put out a notice this week, which you can see at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. And what that is a call to people to start taking action in their communities by getting their common law sheriffs to defend people who are being targeted by the government. And this is now, it's getting so crazy in North America that a statute just came out yesterday in Canada that said you could be fined $1,000 now for hugging in public, if you can believe this.
Oh, I can believe it. They're doing it here too.
Yeah. Okay. So it's as we know, part of a whole global plan. But people have to know that there's a way to defend themselves and not give in to fear. And so we're really kind of trying to activate people. What's been theory up till now, we're trying to put it into practice and give an example to show that people don't have to go along with this. So that's kind of, people can read that notice for themselves and see about what we're talking about.
Okay, so just give us a few examples then. What can we do to protect ourselves from these people?
Well, for one thing, we're saying we've got to keep it very real. So we go to the police, and we've already been doing this, and we say to them, we're not posing any kind of health threat. If you do any kind of research on your own, you'll see that this threat is very exaggerated. It's not airborne. It's got a death rate about 10% less than the normal flu virus that one gets during the year, certain times of the year. And so we're educating the police and saying, we're calling you not to be used against people for these other agendas. And if you do take these actions, we're going to resist you. And so it's kind of a friendly invitation to be part of, get on the right side of this and to help the people and not oppress them. Mm. But there's other things too, like we're setting up support networks so that if we have a network of safe houses, we have ways to get people into hiding. More prominent people have already been targeted. We've had a number of people on our network already picked up by the police. So it's kind of a practical issue of defense.
So the police are actually working with you and helping you to do this.
There's some the best results we get is in America and our allied groups there, where they've actually had county sheriffs agree to, come to common law workshops and to consider what's going on instead of just mindlessly obeying orders from the government, right, about this stuff.
Hmm. We were going to talk, too, about my application to become a common law sheriff. And this morning you emailed me and said that actually we don't need to wait for the ITCCS. We can do it
ourselves here. So can you just walk me through very briefly how that would work?
Well, it's true. The tribunal has been kind of reorganizing because a number of their people were picked up, so they've had to take some new security measures and slow down what they do. But in that sense, people can deputize their own sheriffs. They can accredit themselves. And one of the ways we do that, there's different ways to do it. The best way to do it is to get a charter of 12 men and women who actually form a common law assembly, and they themselves can then elect their own sheriffs. That's kind of constitutionally the way to do it. If it's more of an emergency, then I would simply urge people to read what's in the common law training manual that we produce and accredit somebody who not only has a knowledge of the law, but is able to keep their head and keep cool. And you need these personal qualities to be a sheriff, to deputize others, to be real peacekeepers and not, you've got to use common sense and judgment, right, mm-hmm. in all these situations. There's definitely a way to do that. But the best way to do it, if you have 12 men and women, we have a charter that you sign, and then, legally, you can then appoint your own peace officers.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll look into that. Because my business partner down in Adelaide is desperate to get this all moving because he's got indictments out against these people, and it's time to start moving on it. So we do need it.
Well, eventually, the idea, Mike, too, about the common law sheriffs is that eventually what we need is community policing. We need, citizen militias that can protect their own communities. Mm. And the sheriff is really key to that because they can, legally bring those things about. In the old, it's based on out of England, the old shire system where the sheriff was actually somebody who could establish courts. They have a lot of power. And so that's the idea. They're kind of like the tip of the spear in a lot of this work.
Okay. So once we have the sheriffs and we start issuing indictments from the grand jury, what happens then?
Well, you need the structure of the court set up. And of course, the basis of it is really the jury and the citizen prosecutor who leads the case. Yeah, I mean, you know the details of your own case the best, so you'd have to decide how best to do that. But the idea is that you make it very public. You put on a notice of claim. This is the action you're bringing. You call for witnesses and people to stand as jury members. And you serve these warrants on the people who you're naming. It's got to be individuals. You can't just name a system or a government or something. You've got to have individuals who are named in the indictment. Right. And back it up with evidence.
All right, so moving on now, Kevin. What's going on in Canada with regards to the coronavirus? Are you getting such stringent restrictions imposed on you as we are here?
Well, it's pretty ridiculous. And, of course, the so-called Commonwealth countries have an integrated police and intel network. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, England, whoever else, the major Commonwealth countries. So undoubtedly it's the same process in both our nations, but it's getting really extreme now. They're talking in Canada, they basically dissolve the government. Out of 338 members of parliament, there are only 32 were present. That's like 10% quorum all of a sudden. And the prime minister is in seclusion. I believe under house arrest, under a fake story of being self-quarantined. His wife just happened to be sick. And this small executive council has taken over. They're the, quote, Queen's Privy Council. And they're issuing all these laws, including power to tax without parliament being in session. Now, that's why the English Revolution happened in 1640s, because the king was trying to do that, tax without going to the people. And, it's like all of these medieval things are being revived in the Spirit campaign. Part of the taxation is going to be to pay for a huge bailout. They're giving $55 billion to China, to the PetroChina, and these other Asian corporations operate in Canada. So under the guise of this health scare, they're just robbing people and doing it dictatorially. But they're keeping people afraid on the ground. They just brought in a statute that you can be fined $1,000 for hugging in public. You know, I mean, it's absurd, right? So, yeah.
Unfortunately, in these times, we seem to be ruled by absurd people with absurd ideas. And nobody's standing up to say, hey, you can't do that because we have inherent rights. And this is the problem, of course, people don't know what their rights are. And I guess it's up to you and me to, and many others, of course, to help educate people. But it's a long, hard process, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, this is backfiring on them. We find that these extreme measures always get a lot of people upset, very upset, and wanting to learn. They're more open. Sometimes you need these things to wake people up more, right, to see that, no, this is a police state they're imposing, and it's already happening. So I found, you know, basic information, like I remember standing in the store and people were forced to stand apart, and I said to them, this is not airborne, right? And the death rate is lower than the normal flu, so what is this all about? Just planting seeds of questioning and doubt, right, in their minds. And but, you know, some of the important evidence coming out now, we have like these a whole network of health physicians, right, who are like naturopathic physicians. They've done a lot of research into this. The coronavirus has been around a long time. It's not especially lethal, but it is lethal when it combines with the 5G system. So we think it was designed out of China as a bioweapon. So that you find in Wuhan, where it all started, has the highest 5G installation of any city in the world. Because what the 5G does is saps oxygen out of the blood. The electromagnetic system, it deprives the brain of oxygen, so people fall down, literally. There are these hotspots where the virus does affect a lot of people, but that's because a lot of 5G is present. So they designed this bioweapon to hit like military facilities where there's lots of 5G, but not the people outside the military facilities. It's targeted.
Pandora's box.
Right. It's targeted 5G installations. So it's not a virus per se. It's a virus plus 5G. And so they're, of course, not telling anyone that.
The problem is, how do we prove this? You know, people look at you and go, nah, that can't be true. But when you've got so many experts coming out and saying the same thing, and it's pretty obvious what's going on, how do we prove it?
Well, the evidence is there. It's like what I found doing the work over the years about genocide and child trafficking and murder. It's not so much evidence or lack of it. It's people's unwillingness to believe. Because they caught it when you're in the fear mode of the brain, your conscious thinking, critical thinking shuts down. But that only lasts for so long. And we find it's like when a country goes to war, everyone's waving the flags in the first year or whatever. And then the reality kicks in and people go, wait a minute. And usually in history, you find a revolution will break out by the very same people who've been waving the flags because, you know, it can swing to its opposite extreme. So these rulers are playing with fire now. They're potentially sowing seeds of their own destruction by doing this. We got to just keep at it and keep educating people and say, you can, you know, there's an alternative here. That's why we're saying to people, you don't have to sit idly by. You can take action. And that gives people confidence, right, and hope.
This is true. And that's why we came up with that 5-point plan in our Advance Australia website. And I'll put the link up here. But, you know, if we're going to move forward, we need a plan first. And while my plan may not be perfect, I don't see anybody else's plans around for the future. We're all sort of reacting rather than being proactive. And I think if we're going to move forward, we have to be proactive.
Absolutely. Now's the time to give a vision of what something else could be, because that's what attracts people. And we're not just reacting, you know, because how much can you do when you just react, right? I mean, you know, it's like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, a battle is won before it's ever fought by whoever picks the terrain of battle and defines the battle themselves. And we have to define what the issue is and not let them do it, right?
That's right. Yeah. All right, mate. I thank you very much for coming on board. And as usual, if you've always got these pearls of wisdom, so welcome back anytime.
we'll stay in touch for sure. We've got to, especially these days.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers.
sheriff asked me why I started the fight. It didn't take much, she didn't do right. I saw my baby a-hugging and a-kissing. She didn't know I just got out of prison. I stormed off over to give him a fright. And that, my friends, is how I started the fight. Well, my man she was with threw on the floor. That just riled me up even more. I fainted with my right from under his glove. I slammed him hard with all my might. And that, my friends, is how I ended the fight. He never saw it coming, he never felt it hit. He thought I'd fight fair, I said, hey, fuck that shit. He fell to the floor, I kicked him in the gut. I was yelling and a cussing, holding him a mutt. If you don't want trouble, don't start a fight. Cause my friends, you won't end it up right.
Please consider donating to help keep us going. You can donate just once or make it a monthly donation. Any amount is welcome. To donate, go to our website at www.thebloodyaussiebattler.com and click on Donate.